We're all of the stars. We're fading away. Just try not to worry. You'll see us someday. Just take what you need and be on your way. And stop crying your heart out. Ah.
Eric Ten Hag. More like Eric Eight Hag.
Hey, everybody. It's the Week in the Tackle podcast with me, Tom Renzo Rennie, and him, Brian. Did he do it? Yes, he did. He done it. Done, Seth. How are you, mate? You all right?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you and I are together. On days like this, you know, we can commiserate about our teams being absolutely terrible, bottom of the table, and here we are with two of the most unlikable faces. Wait. Sorry, that was Chelsea against Tottenham. Two of the more unlikable voices on Week in the Tackle. Tom Rennie, Brian Dunseth. How are you,
Paul? I mean, you know what's annoying is that I can't even feel like a sense of I could have some fun here with Man United being so bad. You know, some fan-to-fan, fan-on-fan action, some hot fan-on-fan fun. I can't have it because we support, you and I, the two, sorry, Tim, shittest teams in the country at this moment in time. The two shittest teams in Premier League football right now are supported by you and me. And I just, you know what? I didn't think it was going to be a great start. I didn't think it was going to be great. You ever heard of the phrase, sorry, Tim, I'm three already, the f***ing? You ever heard of the f***ing? That's four, right? So basically, you're like, everything's going so well. I'm so positive. I'm so happy. I bought a ticket. And then suddenly something happens and it's the f***ing. Mm-hmm. And the loss against Nottingham Forest for West Ham was the f***ing. The loss against Brentford on Saturday for Man United was the f***ing. It was just so f***ing awful. I mean, f***ing hell. It was so f***ing rubbish. Right, let's go. Let's start with Manchester United. We should do that. We should start with Manchester United. I'm totally out of swears now. So
poor Tim. That's good news. I wish people could see poor Tim. Sorry, Tim. I didn't even curse. Poor Tim is out there right now. His head's exploding because, Tom, I think that's like 13 drops.
Well, I had to get up to your level of last week, didn't I? Yeah, I had to try and equal. Yeah. Look, I mean, let's talk about it. I was doing the game for SiriusXM FC and our TalkSports International partners. And, I thought it was going to be bad. And I didn't think it was going to be as bad as I saw Chris Sutton on the BBC website. He's doing their predictions this year. He predicted 3-0 to Brentford. And people thought he was a bit mad. I still wasn't brave enough to go for a Brentford victory in my predictions, but you could see a pathway. You could see you could navigate quite easily to a Brentford win. But I mean, it was actually jaw-droppingly bad. When the fourth went in, I had a line of something like, this is the massacre of Manchester United. But on the second one, I turned to Paul Parker, Premier League title winner with Man United alongside me. And I looked at him and I was like, I did this in commentary, it was a bit wild. And I was a bit like, they need to get the grey kit on. Even the grey kit can't be as bad as the phlegm green kit, as this disgusting. It looked a little bit like a sick child had just sneezed over the windscreen. Yeah. It looked a little bit like toxic waste. It was like radioactive man's vomit. It's such an awful, disgusting kit. They deserve to lose. But I mean, genuinely, from the vantage point we were watching it from and from people watching it on TV, the green of the grass and the green of the shirt was the same green. This sort of stuff shouldn't get out of the first meeting. Is it the same color as the grass? Yes. So maybe we can't see each other. You know, that must be the reason for Scott McTominay's passing, or that it was the Glazers. Apparently the Glazers are it's their fault for everything. They're not good owners, guys. No one's defending them here. They've, you know, loaded the club with debt, and everyone they buy is bought with that debt, and they take massive dividends and profits out of the club. I'm not defending them here. They're terrible owners. But they are not the reason Scott McTominay couldn't pass 5 yards to his right. They are not the reason that Ronaldo simply doesn't care. They are not the reason, sorry, Tim, that Bruno Fernandes is English football's biggest baby bitch. That, like, this is not their fault. It's not their fault that they gave Eric Ten Hag, Erik Ten Weeks, Erik Eikhag. It's not their fault. They signed a centre-half, Danny. I mean, you played there, right? I want to bring you in here. I've got so much to say, but I want to hear from you because I'm fed up with my own voice already. We haven't even done the West Ham bit yet. Sorry, Tim. But, I mean, the thing is that... I won't do any more. Promise. I don't know. We haven't done the bit. But, like, you just... I mean, I don't want to be real basic about this. I don't want to be, like, real basic because I know you've got to do a 500-word think piece and you've got to do, like, you know... The shortest defenders in the world. What is their header win percentage average or whatever? Yeah. You know, no, right? Ben Mee has played 10 years at Burnley and his job is to win the ball in the air. Lisandro Martinez wears XL boy shirts. And when the ball is looping on the goal line, he ain't going to win it. He ain't going to win it under any circumstances. And he might be a great defender and he might be, I mean, judging by the second goal, he's not a good footballer, but of course he is. But, you know, judging by that, he's not. But you don't buy a short-ass centre-half in the Premier League and play away at Brentford. Danny, take the floor. It is yours.
Yeah, this one was a tough... like, honestly, I never, ever in my life thought that being a Manchester United fan and watching this team capitulate over and over in the first 38 minutes against Brentford, at Brentford, all due respect to Brent. Let's do this. Thomas Frank... Brentford, phenomenal day. You guys are fantastic. I mean, so
Josh
much fun
to watch. Josh De Silva, amazing. Matthias Jensen, amazing. So good. Damsgaard, amazing in midfield.
It was well deserved.
Ben Mee was brilliant. Pontus Jansen was brilliant. David Ray was brilliant. Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. You're right. They were great.
All of that being said, now you look at Manchester United. I thought this was the game where it's a bounce back, right? You think after the Brighton game, okay, this is going to be, you're going to at least see the elements of the team that performed rather well in preseason, right? Gave so much hope to people like myself saying, well, I see the press. I see the triangles. I see they're higher up the field. I see this is what they're trying to do. I recognize, I can see there's a tangible identity to what Erik ten Hag's preseason has been looking like. Haven't seen it. Now, I don't know. I've heard all these think pieces. I've listened to as many of the podcasts and interviews and shows that I possibly can. And it's the ghost. It's the weight of last season, or it's the weight of the fan base around the world. They are playing such below average football. There's not one player you can point to and say, huh, worthy of wearing the jersey. Not one. There's not one.
And this is that true though? I mean, is that true? Because I look at the team.
Who?
I agree to a point. But this is every single one of them. Every single one of them is good enough to play for Manchester United if there was some sort of direction or plan or whatever, right? Look, mate, they played a Premier League game against one of the most energetic teams in the country, and they played Christian Eriksen and Bruno Fernandes and Fred in midfield, right? Now, look, even on their best day, those guys aren't going to outrun the Brentford midfield. That is a super dumb thing to have done.
So what about the ball? Well, I mean, listen, Brighton was a better team.
Couldn't get after the ball.
Look, even when they had the ball, what could they do with the ball? That's the same with Brighton game. It's the same with Brentford game. That's what I'm saying. Give me this. Listen, I know it's farcical and it's fanciful and it's all the F's, cuckolds, when it comes to the way Manchester United fans look at this team. We live in La La Land. We're in dreamland. We are retrospectively looking back at Sir Alex Ferguson and those fun years as being global dominant forces in the footballing world.
But what does that mean for today, though?
Like, zero. That's the problem.
That's why it affects you. It's a good talking point. Why does that make them be that bad against Brentford? Let's burrow down into that, because your point is well taken and well made. Yeah. And understood completely. There's the Ferguson bit and there's the now. I think they've accepted the now to a point, these players. I don't think they're trying to play to Fergie's legacy. There is something fundamentally gone wrong now. So what I want you to do is put these guys in Arsenal shirts, or put these guys in West Ham shirts, or put them into whoever shirts, and tell me why they were so bad against Brentford. And you can't say Alex Ferguson, and you can't say the Glazers.
Simple.
And you can't say Michael Carrick.
I can tell you what it is. They lack heart. They lack heart. They lack identity.
You can't say that about Christian Eriksen. We know about his heart.
Well played. Slow cap. But at the same time, Christian Eriksen would have rather been wearing a Brentford jersey than a Man United jersey with the way that that team performed.
He wouldn't. He literally didn't want to.
I know. That's what I'm saying. He made a huge mistake coming to Manchester United. He should have stayed at Brentford. I get it. The allure, the money, all of that. Listen, the reality is when you look at this team from a competition standpoint, you got one or two guys that get stuck in. From a technical standpoint, what happened to some of these guys? Where is that Jadon Sancho guy? Where is that Marcus Rashford guy? Bruno Fernandes, ever since Cristiano showed up, has been a shadow. Bruno Fernandes is a shadow of the guy.
You know what this is, don't you? You know what this is? It's because Derek Ray, God bless him, the king of pronunciation, he got the job on FIFA, the lead commentator job, and the world started knowing Bruno Fernandes as Bruno Fernandes. And ever since, he became Bruno Fernandes because of Derek Ray's brilliance. And ever since, everyone from Aberdeen to London to Florida to one of the Washingtons. There's two of it. It's weird. To one of the Washingtons, everyone's doing it. And now Fernandes is like, call me Fernandes. And it annoys him every day. I blame Derek Ray is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Bruno Fernandes. By the way, I'm old enough to remember when Derek Ray was an American broadcaster for the New England Revolution with an American accent. That's how old I am. Go do your research on that one. New England Revolution, 1997. Cha-ching. Anyways.
If anyone can do a spot-on American accent, it's me, guys. Hey, I'm doing my American accent. No, it's probably Derek Ray, isn't it? He's good at it.
I'm a Tatnam fan. So where do we go from here? By the way, as much as we'll get into the Timmy Tickles Lego helmet at the end of the... Eric Ten Hag or Eight Hag or however many games he's seven hog, six game, whatever, however more he has left.
He's not going to make it.
The fact that, here's my thing.
They don't like him already.
If you are going to be as Dutch of an individual and as a presence, and, you know, I was with Simon Peach midweek in Minnesota at the All-Star game. He's the one that drew the ire of Eric Ten Hag when he had the gall to actually ask about Cristiano Ronaldo. If you're going to be this guy, well, then you better show some heart.
Yeah.
And for as much as those two in London today were over the top, and we're recording on Sunday, so this will be Monday, so yesterday, over the top in terms of getting involved in the game, Ten Hag looked like a security worker at Wembley during the Euro finals.
Yeah.
He wanted nothing to do with any of his team walking by. And all I expect at some point is to not show me that you're pissed, like crossing your arms and sitting there and not saying anything. By the way, why isn't anyone making fun of his assistant coach with the earbuds when Chris Armas was getting made fun of every single time?
Oh, it's because everyone is anti-American. Okay, that's what it is. Sure. You're absolutely right. United aren't getting much stick right now.
Yeah.
They got
Give
a lot more when Chris Armas was there.
Give it
also,
to
no one knows who that is.
Chris Armas or that other guy?
Whoever that other guy is. Yes,
he's like a knockoff version of Eric Ten Hag.
Bill Thomas, he's pal. Yeah, we know him. Yeah.
So, anyways, I show me something. Show me something. If you're gonna sit there and you're gonna talk about the identity and the values and who you are and the individual and the nicknames of the neighborhoods of the people that you're from and all of this stuff, you either have the locker room or you've already lost the locker room. And that's the scary part because we're two matches into the season.
Yeah, if you're going to be, you know, Miss Trunchbull, A, you've not learned the lessons from Roald Dahl's classic Matilda. And B, you know, you've got to actually have the discipline to make the kid eat the chocolate cake. Like if Eric Ten Hag was Miss Trunchbull in Roald Dahl's classic Matilda, the kid would have just gone, I'm not eating this, you silly bald Sorry, Tim. That's what would have happened. And it wouldn't have been the seminal, beautiful children's book that it is. Though I did hear some terrible things about Roald Dahl this week, which really made me question my childhood. Anyway, we do need to move on. We don't want to get too bogged down in Man United because it's Liverpool next week. So maybe we should record on the Tuesday because that's going to be super funny. So maybe we should do it maybe after. I'm doing the game for SiriusXM FC again with our friend Paul Parker. So maybe, I don't know, is this mad? We should maybe get Paul on to do a bit with us, and then we'll reconvene.
It's gonna be a bloodbath.
I'll see if Paul wants to talk to me afterwards, and then we'll record Week in the Tackle afterwards. We'll work that in. That's just a production meeting on air. That's what we do. But final bit on this, final thing this week, is there going to be enough transfer business for the interminable, endless damn window is still open for transfers with the season ongoing? Is this going to be fixed this week? by the end of the transfer window? Like, genuinely, I'm asking you now, can Man this United. Be retrieved? Can this be retrieved at Man United?
No. No way. I mean, how? I mean, listen, last week, after we recorded our first one, Arnautovic was linked to Manchester United.
Should have bought him.
Marco Arnautovic was linked.
Should have bought him.
And now we got to watch Manchester United fly out to Turin to go meet with Adrian Rabiot's mom.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is genius. Keep the money inside the family. But his mom yeah. and the track record that he has at PSG with the French national team as being a substitute and not being called agent. In. And now this is where Man United's at. Adrian Rabiot was in the midst of being bought off like Aaron Ramsey. He's going to be gone at the end of the season. He's going to be free. And Manchester United is going to give him $17 million to Juve and then give this guy, what, $250 a week? They're Crazy. Mad. Nobody wants to go. They bungled this once again. And I'm old enough to remember when Richie Arnold went and got himself secretly taped at the pub with all the mates. And all of a sudden, all these promises. And I'm so angry. And this is so bad. Like, what's changed? It's all bullshit. Sorry, Tim. It is. Every single thing that has been we got, by the way, I like Lisandro Martinez. I think he's going to start at the World Cup alongside Romero for Argentina. I know he's going to get a stick because he's small, and I can't believe how many text messages I'm getting from my friends, you big jerks, about his size. But
not little jerks, though, are they?
Malacia is a player. At least he's got more heart and soul. He was MFing everybody when he came on. He
we have to move on. But like,
but there's what are they going to do in the window? The heart thing, one name. If you're De Jong, why would you ever come to Manchester United?
I tell you why it's not an answer. The heart thing, because Christian Eriksen has quite literally a heart, thankfully. And Marcus Rashford saved the nation's children. They have a heart. I don't think they would just give up and flounce off like Ronaldo did when he saw the United fans and walked up and thought, "Now, forget that for a game of soldiers. I'm off."
Is he wrong? Do you blame him for wanting to leave?
I don't blame him for wanting to leave, but don't think there's...
I'm like, oh, okay, cool. What did you he know do? Exactly what you're talking about.
What did he do?
No, I'm not saying
you don't win games on your
I'm
CV.
I'm saying that
do
he
you?
Went through he June failed. And got through
he
July,
failed both
and
games.
He looks at it and says, "You guys haven't added anybody. I don't want to be a part
Who
of this."
Cares?
Look at the team responding.
Why
knew.
Does that allow him to
he
flounce
knew.
Off like a child?
He
doesn't
knew.
Allow him to flounce
it's
off.
It's great. By the way, he's wearing long sleeves. Wasn't it like 90? Weren't you guys like dying over there because
it was
too hot?
It was super hot. It's still super hot. I have a super hot story for you about my super hot Sunday. So we'll park the temperature conversation. But yes, it's terrible.
You pit it
you
out.
Jerk.
You know this guy, Gabby Jesus? The guy Gabby Jesus plays
for
Arsenal
Football
Club? Oh,
yeah. I did it with him once with 11 of our friends.
Yeah. How'd that go? Did you make it out? Make it out alive?
He was totally hungover by the end. Mm.
So Gabby Jesus. This kid's on fire, man. Mm. He is so good for Arsenal. So that leads me to try to understand, what is it about Pep Guardiola's style, interpretation of football, or the players around him at Man City that Pep could literally, and I know it's different, right? It's Erling Haaland. How do you walk away from that? But Julian Alvarez is coming over as well, blah, 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 blah. But like, Gabby Jesus was there for what, 4 seasons?
Yeah.
At what point did Pep Guardiola look at Gabby and say, not good enough, not good enough? And now all of a sudden, I don't know if it's Mikel Arteta. I don't know if it's the players around him. I don't know if it's just a change of scenery being down in London. I don't know if it's Arsenal Football Club. But all of a sudden, Gabby Jesus looks a legitimate, I don't know, I know this is outlandish, but he kind of looks like a legitimate Golden Boot winner, contender in the Premier League.
Yeah.
So when you watch his movement, you watch his center of balance and how low he gets and the technical ability when he's chopping guys up and down. And then he gets his head up and he opens that, opens that shoulder to pick out the far post. And if you take it, he gives that whoop, little cut back underneath, that little drag. And like when I'm watching him play, all I kept thinking to myself is, how is this guy doing so well at Arsenal and yet was deemed not a starter, not a 0.9 starter, not really even the first sub off the bench or an impact sub off the bench. He was that guy that's like a plug and play, maybe a wide player, maybe late in the game. It was just crazy to me watching how dominant he's been. And I know it's early, but what, he's got like 9, 10, 11 goals so far in his appearances with regards to preseason and now the start of this season for Arsenal. Kid's on fire, man.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I thought it was fantastic. Half an hour at Crystal Palace, the game I did the opening weekend. I didn't see the Leicester game in detail, but I certainly saw the goals and spoke to the commentator who said he was incredible. But here's what's interesting about that is that, number one, I think players get tired of Guardiola. I think we're learning that now because he's been at this club longer than anywhere else. And you heard it in Raheem Sterling's interviews during England's European Championship run last year, let alone his stuff pre this weekend, where he just said, look, I was wasting my time there. And he said, there's things that people don't know and this sort of stuff across the interviews that I can recall of those two times. And I think there's a point where you're dealing with this incredibly intense 24 hours a day. Like, he'll literally call Yaya Toure and say, Yaya, did you have sex with your wife tonight? Did you? It's a sex ban. Make sure you did and put her on the phone. Yeah, she doesn't sound satisfied. Bye, Yolanda. And put the phone down, right? I assume. Right. So, like, this is what he is and this is what he does. And after a while, I just want to have sex with my wife without my boss's permission. You know, that's what it's happening at Manchester City, right? You kind of see it with Grealish now. Not the wife thing. I don't think he's married. Good luck. You know, they try to take the personality from Jackie, right? Jackie wants to beat two or three players and show you his calves and be the best player on the pitch and get into a fight and call you a tosser while he scores the winner. That's what Jackie wants. And now I watched him at the West Ham game the other week and they won it and they were great and they were dominant. Pass it left, pass it right. Dummy to go. Overlap pass. Find the next overlap. Look for space. And it's all lovely and you'll win a trophy. But I bet it's really dull and it's personalityless. And it's sort of like, you know, there's hit shows out there, hit TV shows that other people like. And they're like, oh, it's amazing. And you watch it and you're like, what is this? Like, why? Where are the dragons? Like, what is this? Why are there no dragons? In my show, everyone's on smack and he's created a new crystal meth and everyone's getting gatted in the face. And the guy looks, it's amazing. It's amazing. And your show is crap. Oh, yeah, but it won all the Emmys. So it must be good. It wins Emmys. It doesn't make it good. And that's what Man City are. They're a trophy winning machine. They get all the Emmys, but The Simpsons has loads and Family Guy has none. And that is ridiculous because Simpsons has not been good since I had a side parting. To be fair, Family Guy's not good anymore, but it doesn't matter because it should have won some Emmys at the time it was good from 2003 to 2008. And that's what's happening at Manchester City, right? That's the story of Gabby Jesus. And he's gone away and he's now in a new show and it's called Simpsons 2 Full Throttle. And he's banging him in left, right and centre, picking up those sweet, sweet Emmys, meeting Stephen Colbert on stage, living the life. And that's what it is. There's your answer. Was that clear? Now I'm het up today because we were meant to be recording on Monday. So this is meant to be a day off for me. So today I didn't watch the games, the two Sunday games. I did get home and watch the West Ham game in full and the long highlights of the Tottenham game. But I was today out for lunch with two friends who have all got babies. So I was at lunch with babies today our babies.
You took your babies. Okay.
To central London on a train for the first time ever. It's 33 degrees Celsius today, which is about 102 degrees Fahrenheit. It's not so nice. The train was nice.
No, don't you just double 33, which is 66, then you add 32, and that is...
Oh, it's like 92, not 102, it's like 92. Yeah, my math failed me there.
Yeah.
Never do maths live.
Cal State Fullerton. Just come to Cal State Fullerton, man. Like, it's pass or fail. I'll get you through. We'll cheat together.
Thanks, coach, lecturer, Mr. Dunst. I don't know. Thank you. But it was too hot. And so I did that thing where I listened to the game on like my earpiece whilst having a conversation with people, whilst my daughter was like throwing Nando's at a wall. And then we walked up to this wonderful little area in King's Cross in central London where they've got the inland fountains in the floor and it's all super cool. And when I chased my 2-year-old daughter into the fountain, on my earpiece, Saeed Benrahma had opened the scoring for West Ham. And I thought, right, that's it. We're going to win this 2-3-0. Lovely job. Got in the fountains, bit of a laugh, yada, yada, yada. Came back out again. And the commentator said, and it's Nottingham Forest 1, West Ham United 0. The second half is getting underway. And I thought, he's only balls this up. I need a commentator. Moron. Got the score wrong. Oh, what an idiot. And I was like, what's happened here? And then from that point, I had a margarita then, didn't I? I had a bleeding frozen margarita, grapefruit margarita. C'était magnifique. And then they beat us. Nottingham Forest. Oh, it's great. Their first Premier League win in 23 years. Great for them. I don't care. Going to get relegated. Don't matter. Right? But I mean, they're buying everybody, by the way. I mean, you know, genuinely good luck to them. It is a great story and all that, but I don't care about that. I mean, how do you have, first of all, the goal disallowed's a joke. It's a joke. Like, Antonio just runs into their defender. That's what happens in the game. It's not a foul. It wasn't going to get there. Benrahma scores. It should stand. VAR overturning, that's embarrassing for everybody involved. Collision is collision. That's the way it goes. He's given the goal when he thought that was enough to overturn it. Total bollocks. Fine. Their goal is then utter trash.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's the trashiest,
most beautiful,
awful goal. Because mainly, again, West Ham sold a centre-half. The centre-half they bought is injured all season. Dawson's not there and Igbona's not there. So they've had all this time to plan for this. And no disrespect to Ben Johnson, who I like, but he's not a centre-half. And he panicked in that moment. And it goes to their bloke and it hits him and they score. Very annoying. And then, right, they hit the bar. They hit the bar again. They miss two open goals. They have one cleared off the line in the second half. And then the penalty, right? First of all, that's deliberate handball.
100%
that's a save. That is a red card. Hey, ref, I mean, read the
rules.
They're
going to say the goalkeeper. They're going to say the goalkeeper was on the line behind him.
It doesn't matter. Deliberate red card that prevents the goal is a red card. It doesn't matter. That bit doesn't matter because it's a save and the ball is going to go in and it needs to be saved otherwise. So it's a save. It's a red card. He gives a yellow, which is terrible. So all of that's annoying anyway.
You going to go for Decky? You going to pop a Decky?
Now, I mean, I don't have a go at him for taking the penalty, right? Okay. Because, you know, when you take penalties, you know, anyone who does it at any level.
I used to be
a penalty taker because I used to love taking penalties. So I used to love hitting it as hard as possible right at the goalkeeper to make him hopefully fall in the goal. Just for fun, really. The score was irrelevant to me. I just wanted to hurt him. Hmm. Like, if I could break a nose with a penalty, magnificent. That's my aim. You know, I like to snap the crossbar if possible. Give it a right Julian Dix wallop. Okay. Right? It's a bad penalty. It's a bad penalty. And it's saved by, you know, Dean Henderson. Hope he's all right. Hope he didn't get promised anything this week because it might have upset him. But if you are a striker, okay? Think about your strikers, your great strikers ever. Think about your great strikers. Think about your current great strikers, Erling Haaland, Harry Kane. Think about your great strikers of all time, Thierry Henry and Alan Shearer. And we could do this forever. Your great strikers. Here's what your great strikers do. We saw it last week. We did it on the show last week. Erling Haaland grabbed the ball. And then as Guardiola said to us in the press conference afterwards, if anyone had taken that ball of Erling Haaland, he would have punched them in the face. That's your striker. Your striker lives on goals. He lives on numbers. He lives on stats. And that goal is the thing. That's the moment. That's what I'm waiting for all week. And if I don't get it, I'm starving. I'm devastated. I'm furious. And West Ham strikers, whoever they were, West Ham's goal scorers on the field at that moment, whoever they were like, don't fancy it. If your striker does not take penalties, you have not bought a striker. And if any striker out there wouldn't grab that ball and try and stick it in the back of the net, then I would say there's something psychologically wrong with you. Genuinely, you're playing in the wrong position. Goals are the thing. Goals are your lifeblood. And you gave that to someone else. You gave that to someone else, a shot from 12 yards against someone who's back up to David De Gea, whose fingers are made of chocolate. What are you talking about? You get it, you hit it, you score it, and then you get your goal bonus and you say, I'm the striker, I'm the man round here, Ray Winston, snooker balls in the sock, I'm the daddy round here. And instead, you give it to the defensive midfielder. Shameful. And that's why they lost.
Two things. Well, one's a statement, one's a question. First statement, we let the wrong keeper go. Should have kept Dean Henderson. Should have let De Gea go. Secondly,
did you really
want Mikel Antonio to take that penalty?
Yeah. Of course, he's the striker.
You think he would have scored it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, that isn't the point. That isn't the point.
I wouldn't want Mikel Antonio taking pens.
Actually, the last one he took, I think he missed that Old Trafford, if memory serves. But
that's the one I was going to bring up.
But that's the point. We don't have a striker. But if you haven't got a striker, I'd never expect Declan Rice to score a goal. But I do expect Benrahma. I do expect Fornals. I do expect Socek. I mean, Socek should be getting 8 to 10 a season, right? I think Scamacca wasn't on yet. If Scamacca was on,
Scamacca
I would expect
came on
him
like
to
10
take
minutes
it.
Later. Yeah.
Take it. I mean, if we get a penalty next up and Scamacca's on, I mean, here he is here. That's Gianluca. Here he is.
Oh, yeah. Good looking bloke.
next time we get a penalty, and if he's on, if he doesn't take it, we've not bought a striker, and I want my refund.
You know what's going to suck? Bramley Moore, Doc, new stadium. It looks incredible so far. You know, I see all the pictures, the cement's in the ground, and it's it looks like it's heading in a positive direction. Just one quick
question. Where's the cement?
The cement's in the ground. At some point, when we are going to watch the debut of the cement in the ground for the new stadium for Everton. Hey, just quick question. They're going to be in the championship, aren't they?
Sorry. I'm butchering your point. I'm sorry.
The cement's in the ground.
I wasn't ready. There were so many accents simultaneously. I don't know what it was. Yes. Where are they going to be, Danny?
They're
going to
be in the championship. Holy Christ, they're terrible. Everton sucks. I mean, they proper suck. And every single week, it's another injury on top of another injury. And they try their best. They give it the old college try. They're done Sethery as much as they possibly can, is in full effect. But my God, they've scored one goal this season. And it was because the French food inspector, Lucas Digne, or Luca Dean, ended up knocking the ball into his own net. They are terrible. And for Frank Lampard and company, I don't care if it's Dominic Calvert-Lewin. I don't care who you're looking for. At some point, you better go out in the market and try to find somebody that even gives you a presence up top, because there is nothing right now in these first two matches to suggest they've got a shot in hell to survive. And on top of Andrés Gomes, Andros Townsend, and Yerry Mina, by the way, the housery from Yerry Mina is...
Sorry, Tim!
I appreciate you, Tim. But that's not even done Sethery. That's just like maliciousness intent to try to hurt people, Yerry Mina. I don't see how right now they're not odds-on favorite outside of our two clubs, Manchester United and West Ham, to be hitting the drop at the end of the season.
We're not going to go down, right? United, I'll tell you this right. I mean, I always say this anyway, when West Ham are good or bad, you never look at the table 10 games in, ever. Never look at it. However,
I saw your tweet.
Man United are not going down. No chance. West Ham are not going down. No chance. Full stop. And I'm happy. I would take any bet on this. There is no way those two go down. Not a chance. They might finish like 14th and have a terrible season. I don't discount that at all. But relegation, not a chance for those two. But, you know, feel free to enjoy week in the bottom of the league, everybody, for this week. But with Everton, I mean, they're a bit aimless and they're a bit directionless and they're a poor team. I think they probably are fifth or sixth favourites at the moment to go down. I think Onana seems like he might be all right, had a bit of energy about him. But look, that team is just going to try and grind its way to points, because I think Frank Lampard clearly is a very cautious manager. Like, we don't know what he is as a coach right now. There is no sort of philosophy. You don't really get to have a philosophy when you're struggling. You know, you get points on the board and then you have to work on your philosophy, which is something that West Ham and Man U might need to have over the next few weeks. Forget about what you do. Just get the job done.
But even without Richarlison, I mean, you lose Richarlison, and at least Richarlison gave you something in the final third. And he was going to done Sethery it. He was going to dive for it. He was going to try to put the referee in a situation where the referee was going to blow the whistle in his favor or show him a yellow card. At least you had something. There's something up there. They got nothing. They got nothing.
With a few players, do you reckon they'll stay up, though? I mean, Aston Villa were equally bad. That game was poor.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Aston Villa right now is probably one of the biggest surprises for how poor of a start to the season it's looked like. Intriguing to watch this Steven Gerrard, Tyrone Mings thing kind of play itself out. Because when you start throwing your weight around, you got an iconic former player who's trying to put his stamp as a manager, not only on the team, but in his kind of this new professional life he's in. If Steven Gerrard looks at him and see this is something that is such a weird conversation point, because out here we had it with Jurgen Klinsmann when Jurgen Klinsmann was the U.S. men's national team, right? There were moments I was out of LA when I was still playing. He came out to an LA Galaxy practice and we were finishing our training and we were going through stuff. He was getting his badges at the time, Jurgen, and we did a finishing drill. And he was in charge of like the finishing drill. And I'll never forget this. he was talking to the players. He's like, okay, this is what I want you to do. And this is the, here's the diagram of what we're going to do, blah, blah. Guys couldn't pull it off. And he goes, guys, watch. And he like hits the ball out wide and he runs in the box. And it's like, ball comes in. It's like, boom, you know, typical Jurgen Klinsmann finish with his head. And he's like, this is what I'm trying. This is what I want to look for. And at that point, it always stuck with me and resonated, because then when you're a manager, you're asking guys to do the stuff that is so simple for you as a player. And now you're having to verbalize it to players that aren't the quality of player you were. So you're stuck behind this eight ball where physically, you know what you're asking the players to do. Psychologically, you're understanding that these players can't physically do what you want them to do. So how do you get them that close? Mm. So with guys like Steven Gerrard or Frank Lampard, those type, how do you then transmit to the players that are way below the skill of player that you were, that this is my philosophy, this is my interpretation, this is what I want to see tactically, and technically, this is what I'm asking you guys to do. And I that's why I kind of, these two teams are the ones that I'm finding super interesting in the start of the year, because I think Aston Villa player-wise should be much closer to who they were last year, because I think their highs, whatever their ceiling is, I think is probably a 7th, 8th, 9 finish. But their lows, they could be, I don't know, 14, 15, 16. At the end of the year?
What I like about the rivalry, and I'm glad you highlighted this, and this didn't come to me until you mentioned it. I don't know this as a fact, okay? I don't know it as a fact, but I know it's true. Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard hate each other. Like, they detest each other. They hate everything about each other. You know, there's the famous thing that English listeners will know about them in midfield under Sven, and could they play together, and yada, yada, yada. And of course, they were Liverpool and Chelsea at a time where they were monumental rivals, and, you know, Garcia Garwin, all that sort of stuff. So on the field, they were great rivals, but they played on BT Sport this week over here in England when they were both working for them as pundits. And they did a kind of like, oh, wouldn't it be fun if we did like Lampard against Gerrard and a bunch of like games and that, and it'd be a laugh. Let's do cricket and let's do like punch bags and let's do like your sort of stuff. And they were trying to be all jovial about it. But you know what, you know, oh, it's all a joke. It's all a joke. Yeah. But I really, really hate that guy.
Yeah.
And it's one of those ones where, like, from the outside, it doesn't make sense because they seem like they should get on. And I have this in my workplace. I've always had it, whatever, right? That I just think, oh, we should get on. Why aren't we friends? And it's normally because they hate me. But then, but also it's the other way around. Like, I think people sometimes expect me to be there, mate. And it's like, no, but I genuinely can't stand sight of you. Mm. And maybe you got off on the wrong foot.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just you just get a vibe about someone sometimes. Yeah. I don't like them. And I get this all the time. Just constantly. This is why I don't get many of the jobs that I want.
No.
Because I'm just not likable, apparently, to some. But then others love me, you know? But I think it's that, like those two.
Yeah.
Like and it's so evident they can't stand each other. And even on the sideline, the fact that Frank Lampard turns up in his pajamas and Steven Gerrard's in his suit.
It's so weird. It's so sloppy. It's so sloppy. Yeah. So sloppy.
It's so sloppy, Frank.
Well, but that's like, I mean, listen, we so many times I've had friends that I've made outside of the teams and the cities that I've played for and be like, oh, so-and-so seems like such a great guy. I'm like, no, he's a terrible human being. Guy's a total dick. Sorry, Tim. Or, oh, he does such an amazing job on social media. He seems like such an incredible player and person. I'm like, he's one of the worst people I've ever met.
Yeah.
And he does a phenomenal job pushing out who he wants the world to see who he is or think who he is.
The other way as well. Like, there are people who sometimes people say to me, I can't stand that guy. He's an idiot. Yeah. Why do you work with him on that podcast? And I say, he's actually a really nice guy.
Well, tell your mom I said hello. I haven't talked to her. No, but see, it's the worst kept secret.
And that's
secret.
Where everyone thinks you're a jerk.
Yeah.
But I know that was a joke and I can take jokes. That's fine.
It's just... Those situations are funny because, and by the way, that's when Paul Scholes got pushed out to wide left when he really should have been playing center, I won't get angry about that one either. There's just that you always have to understand there's a bunch of guys in the locker room that don't get along, that don't like each other. And that's fine. You can wear the badge and fight in the same direction and have a blast and win trophies and do all that stuff and not spend a single second around them outside of the interaction during training. I've been around guys that won't, like, if one's in the training room, the other won't even go in. They'll just wait for the guy to go out and then he'll go in, because they just don't want to be around each other. They don't like each other. So it's a farce to think that everybody's friends or everybody's buddies or everybody likes each other, because go normal life. It's just not true. You just don't have to like everyone if you're working with them.
We just spoke about people who don't like each other. Let's do Chelsea against Tottenham, because they just throw up some incredible battles at the Bridge, to use the cliche. This game in this stadium just keeps throwing up these incredible things. First, I mean, do you know what? Forget the game for a second. Conte, Tuchel, if they were allowed to do a proper punch-up, like they should be allowed to, I'm always saying this, like the amount of like jobs worth staff members who jumped on the field to separate them, sit down, fat bloke and bald bloke and whoever you are, an assistant one, an assistant two, sit down. We all want to see, the world wants to see, Tuchel and Conte come to blows. This is what we want to see. I want to see Thomas Tuchel pull on that wig to see if it comes off in his hand, and if it doesn't, straight through the chin. That's what we want to see, folks, okay? And all these, like, staff members, oh, don't do it, boss, he's not worth it. It is worth it for my entertainment. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Who wins, Conte, Tuchel?
Neither of them, because neither of them throw a punch. They're all, hold me back, guy, hold me back.
Let me at him.
I'll get him. I'll throw that punch. Just let me, Tommy. Timmy ain't throwing no punch. And by the way, I didn't realize how small Antonio Conte was. I guess in my mind, he was always bigger. Yeah. But my man looks like he's 5'8". Tuchel looked like he was 6'5", towering over him. And by the way, not for nothing, like, both of them are so unlikable with their antics.
Oh, yeah.
I get it. If they're your guys, I figure, like, oh, you know, like, it was great. All the Tottenham fans were like, oh, Thomas Tuchel, such a dick. Sorry, Tim. Antonio Conte handled that so well. And then you watch the Chelsea fans. Antonio Conte, so unlikable. What a jerk. If he's their manager, okay, fine. It's okay. Whatever. I guess we're allowing dick. I can say dick a lot because it's a family show.
You jerk.
You big
dick. We should use jerk more.
But neither of them are throwing a punch. That's the best part of all of it. But it is a power. Timmy Tickles threw the ultimate power move. Because when you shake someone's hand and you, like, the guy just thinks it's a shake and a walk away, and you yank him back, you put him in your back pocket. I get, like, if somebody won that, it was Timmy Tickles. He put Antonio Conte in his back pocket with the hand, like, not the super grip, pull back, and, like, jammed him up.
That all being said, I loved it, and I'd love to see more of it, and I have no issue with it happening. I know that you have to say, you know, we hate it, it's terrible, you don't want to see scenes like that. When everyone wants to see things like that, of course you have to. But you can see why there was fury from this game. And let's talk about Christian Romero, because, again, he played in your position, and, you know, I've seen some videos of you getting up there and banging a few headers in for Salt Lake City. So, you know, not real Salt Lake. It's a silly name. You've been up there. You've been up there to do it. They don't pay me. And the Romero hair pull. Now, the Romero hair pull is despicable.
It's like a disrespect.
It is despicable duncethery of the highest order. My question to you is, should the goal have been disallowed?
I think he should have. Let me start with the hair pull for Cucurella or Cucurell. I've been hearing a bunch of people. Cucurella. I mean, you guys got to figure out what you English people got to figure out.
A how you're gonna Spanish person that. Said to me this week, it's Cucurella.
Cucurella, because the two
but
L's.
If you're English and you're doing the two L's, you would say Cucurella.
Cucurella. Okay.
So I'm just going to call him Mark.
Okay. I do remember a time when it was Roberto Martinez, when it was Roberto Martinez, and then whatever, neither here nor there. So good old Kuka got his hair pulled. Number one, if you have long hair, there is a possibility of getting your hair pulled. Number two, I mean, listen, I don't really understand the point of VAR. If there's so many of these different incidences that are falling under the clear and obvious, or the determining factor of, is it clear and obviously a red card, where he knows what he's doing. He's being a dick. Romero is being a dick, and he knows what he's doing. But this is also a thing where if you got this little guy with long hair, like, you know, hand in front of you, hand behind you and shifting up and shaping out, and you're, you know, trying to skit set, and you got this guy continuing to bump you while you're just standing. You know who? Azpilicueta does it just as much. He's constantly doing it. He's like that annoying little flea that you can't flick off. Like, he's just constantly in the midst. So I get it. He doesn't stomp on his foot. He doesn't go in to get him. It's a tug. It's a pull. It gets to that weird area. Is it red card worthy? Is it yellow card worthy? I mean, at what point does it go too far? But I think
it should be disallowed. It should be disallowed like that. That is a clear foul with the ball in play.
Yeah.
And again, we spoke about it earlier. Mikel Antonio running into a Nottingham Forest defender before Benrahma scores nowhere near that is disallowed, then why on earth is this allowed? Is it because it was Stamford Bridge, it was Chelsea Tottenham, and quite simply, the boys on VAR, or boys and girls, I don't know who's doing it today, they didn't have the cojones, or the cajones, or the cajones, there's no way of knowing, as our pal Neil Barnett would say, he probably would say in this regard, that they didn't have it. They just didn't have it. I mean, there's some silly petition now for Anthony Taylor not to do Chelsea games anymore. But, you know, frankly, I would sign it, because if he can't disallow that for a clear, despicable foul, then what's the point?
Well, you even go back to the goal where Kai Havertz was fouled. I mean, that for me is a foul. And that starts, that's the generation of the attacking phase of play. So when the ball gets in the back of the net, it doesn't matter how many passes between the start of the offensive phase of play and the goal, you still have to go back. And that there was most definitely a foul on Kai Havertz. So I'm sympathetic to both sides on this one. I get where Chelsea and Thomas Tuchel and everyone's coming from. At the end of the day, this was so far best game of the season. It had everything in it that you would want to see in terms of a proper derby. Two managers that obviously are more than disliking each other. You can tell that they really, really, really do not like each other. And here we are having a good time talking again about VAR. This is what we're going to continue to do, because we have these controversial moments where we're trying to compare and contrast what similar plays are and saying, like you said, quite rightly, if Mikel Antonio's foul or non-foul or collision is worthy to have been judged by VAR to have the guy go to the monitor and, you know, call the goal off, then how are situations like this, you know, we're looking for some type of consistency, and that's where the frustration lies for fans.
But we're meant to be getting consistency now, because they have permanent VAR officials. Who did they hire? Mike Dean. They hired Mike Dean, did they? Yeah. Okay, well, to be fair, no wonder we're getting a weekend of banter of VAR, considering Mike Dean's doing it. Should have been disallowed, or they, you know, it's incredibly frustrating that West Ham didn't win. Do you think when we come back together next week, and maybe we should do it after Man U Liverpool, do you think that you'll be bottom of the league, or do you think I'll be bottom of the league? And should we do a bet on it?
Well, I think at that point we'll be down to Eric Sevenhag, because that's how many more he'll have left after losing his first. There's nothing to suggest that Manchester United is going to be able to compete or repel anything that's coming out of Jurgen Klopp's side right now.
Yeah.
So yes, so, me.
You.
Who do you guys have next weekend?
Brighton.
Oh Jesus! Was, yeah, we're bottom of the table.
West Ham have not beaten Brighton since 2012.
They've never beaten them in
the Premier League, and the last time they beat them was 6-0 in the Championship, the season when they got promoted. Ricardo Vaste scored a hat trick.
I remember Vaste. Yeah,
he's retired many years ago now. I think Ricardo, God bless him. Like, it's been so long. When we won that game, Kevin Nolan was playing for us.
Oh, Kev. Big Kev.
Like this, this is how long ago it's been. I mean, Brighton are going to screw us like they always do. So next week, I actually think we're both still going to be the worst two teams in the country on 0 points. And at that point, I don't know. Should we get into something else? Tennis?
Weak in the tackle is weak in the bottom again.
Weak in the Tackle is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.